Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. And today we're looking at something really fascinating.
Yeah.
It's the rise of modern Indian thought between 1757 and 1947 CE.
Really pivotal time.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's like watching how Indian intellectuals kind of wrestle with British colonialism at the same time as they were rediscovering their own heritage. So we're going to see contradictions, tensions, and, you know,
absolutely,
this forging of a path to independence.
And what's really striking, I think, is that these weren't just, you know, abstract debates happening in ivory towers.
Right.
You know, this is stuff that spilled out into newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, literature and political movements, even religious thought.
It's almost like watching a nation being born in real time.
Exactly.
Right in front of your eyes.
Exactly.
So let's start, I guess, with the British East India Company.
Okay.
A period that was marked by both opportunity and exploitation.
Yeah.
I mean, they weren't really known for their deep understanding of India.
No, not really. I mean, their initial focus was trade and profit.
Right.
Not so much governance.
Right. And they criticize Indians for being, you know, parochial, narrow-minded. But then at the same time, they're fueling divisions along religious and caste lines.
Yeah. There's a real irony there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Kind of criticizing Indians for something they're actually promoting themselves.
It seems kind of counterintuitive.
It is. But if you think about it from their perspective,
right,
it was a way to maintain control.
Okay.
By keeping different groups divided.
Right.
It weakens any potential for unified resistance.
The old divide and rule.
Yeah, exactly. And sadly, that strategy
laid
the groundwork for communal tensions that had a lasting impact.
Yeah, and our sources point to this really interesting example of the establishment of municipal boards.
Right.
On the surface, that sounds like a step towards civic consciousness.
Yeah, fostering a sense of civic duty.
Right. But the reality is...
Well, wasn't that simple?
Yeah.
I mean, think about how they were set up. Seats were allocated based on religious or caste affiliations.
Oh, wow.
So instead of promoting unity, it reinforced those very divisions.
No, it's almost like they were accidentally amplifying.
Yeah. It's a classic example of how even well-intentioned policies can have unintended consequences.
Right. And there's this fascinating primary source we came across.
Oh, yeah.
Delhi's Litton Gazette and Urdu Journal.
Okay. Yeah, I know that one.
It celebrated this assemblage in 1877, which really highlighted these, you know, kind of feudal loyalties.
Yeah.
But they use this really interesting language.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like alongside this celebration of tradition, they're adopting the language of modern civic consciousness.
Interesting.
So they're talking about the public good, Rifa Iyam.
Right.
And they're positioning themselves as the voice of public opinion.
So they're taking these Western concepts and kind of making them their own.
Exactly.
That's fascinating.
So even as the British are trying to solidify their control, these seeds of nationalism are being sown, but not necessarily in the way you might expect.
Right.
So we see all these local organizations popping up before the Indian National Congress.
Yeah, the pre-Congress organizations were vital.
Yeah.
They were really the forerunners of the larger nationalist movement,
okay,
providing a platform for Indians to voice their grievances and demand reforms.
So who are some of these key players?
Well, one standout figure is Surendranath Banerjee.
Okay.
Brilliant student, unjustly dismissed from the Indian Civil Service.
Oh, wow.
Which really fueled his nationalist fervor and led him to found the Indian Association in Calcutta in 1876.
So it's like his personal experience becomes this catalyst.
Yeah, you see that a lot in history.
Yeah, for political action.
Yeah, personal injustices fueling these larger movements.
That makes you wonder, was his dismissal part of a larger systemic bias?
It's a good question, and it highlights those inherent inequalities and prejudices within the system.
And it wasn't an isolated incident, was it?
No, not at all. You see this sense of injustice fueling the growth of many nationalist organizations.
So alongside the Indian Association, what were some of the other groups?
Well, you have the Triplicane Literary Society in Madras, the Pune Sarvajanik Sabha, and even organizations representing specific communities like the National Mohammedan Association in Calcutta.
So you have this whole network of groups all working towards.
Yeah, each with their own approach, but united by this common goal of advocating for Indian interests.
So it's like the early stirrings of a national consciousness.
Absolutely. It's really a testament to the diversity of Indian nationalism at this early stage.
Right. And these groups laid the groundwork.
Yeah, for the more unified movement that would come later.
And that's what we're going to get into.
Exactly.
Excellent.
Good point.
Me neither.
It's going to be good.
I'd see you then. See ya.
So as these groups are gaining traction, there's this parallel development happening
Okay.
of religious and communal identities.
Right. So you have some people striving for a unified Indian nation, but then others
Right.
are more focused on these distinct religious identities. How
Yeah.
did those two visions coexist?
Yeah, it was a complex interplay. You know, think about someone like Swami Vivekananda,
Okay.
a really influential figure
Right.
advocating for social reform and universal values, spreading this message of Vedanta philosophy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, his teachings also had elements of Hindu revivalism.
Okay.
So he's emphasizing Hindu strength and pride.
So it's like a paradox almost,
Yeah.
advocating for universal values, but then also highlighting one specific religious identity.
Right. And that added this whole other layer of complexity to the independence movement.
Right. So some saw it as a way to unite Hindus, but
Exactly.
others worried about alienating other communities.
Yeah. And undermining that goal of a truly inclusive nation.
And it wasn't just in philosophy.
Right.
I mean, literature played a big role too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Think about Bankim Chandra Chatterjee's novels,
Oh, yeah.
depicting these heroic Hindus triumphing over Muslim tyrant.
Those were incredibly popular. But they also fueled communal sentiments, you know,
Right.
portraying history in this very specific way. It
Right.
kind of reinforced that us versus them mentality.
Which the British were already exploiting.
Exactly.
So were there any counter narratives to these kinds of stories?
Oh, absolutely. Muslim writers like Altaf Hussain Hali and Abdul Halim Sharar used history to kind of construct their own narratives
Okay.
of identity and pride, pushing back against those Western critiques of Islam
Right.
and instilling a sense of confidence in Muslim heritage.
So you have this dialogue happening,
Yeah.
different groups drawing on history and literature to
Exactly.
shape their own visions of what India could be.
Yeah, and it's interesting to think about how ordinary Indians were navigating all of
Yeah,
this.
who did they identify with? Where did they see themselves in this emerging nation?
Yeah, and to understand that, I think we need to delve into how Western ideas were influencing Indian thought during this period.
Okay, so it wasn't just a simple case of, adopting Western thought wholesale.
No, it was much more nuanced than that.
Okay.
Indian intellectuals engaged with these ideas, critically adapting them to their own context.
So can you give us an example of how that played out?
Sure. Take the concept of liberalism, for example.
Okay.
Indian intellectuals were drawn to its emphasis on individual rights and representative government.
Which resonated with their struggles against colonial oppression.
Exactly. But they couldn't just transplant Western liberalism directly onto Indian soil.
Right.
They had to grapple with things like caste communalism, the
Okay.
role of
So it
tradition.
was more of a synthesis
Yeah, a blending of Western ideas with Indian realities.
to create something new.
Exactly. It's a
Right.
testament to the intellectual dynamism of this period.
And alongside that, you also have this rediscovery of India's own intellectual
Oh,
heritage.
absolutely. This wasn't just about absorbing new ideas from the West.
Okay.
It was about reclaiming India's past, asserting its cultural distinctiveness.
So tell me more about that.
Well, scholars started delving into ancient texts, philosophical systems, literary traditions.
Okay. Rediscovering the richness and depth of India's intellectual history.
So not just glorifying the past.
No, they were using it to inform the present and shape the future.
Like Rabindranath Tagore.
Exactly.
Yay.
He drew inspiration from ancient wisdom to address contemporary challenges.
And synthesized Eastern and Western thought,
Yeah.
emphasizing cultural exchange and this kind of universal humanism rooted in Indian values.
Right. His work had a huge impact both within India and beyond.
And don't forget about those archaeological discoveries,
Oh, yeah. How could we?
like the excavations of Harappa and Mohenjo-Daro.
Exactly. Revealing an ancient civilization that predated even the Vedic period.
That must have been monumental.
It challenged existing narratives about India's past,
Yeah.
and it provided a powerful counterpoint to that colonial view of India as, this backward society
Right.
in need of Western guidance.
It's like a reclaiming of agency, a
Exactly.
declaration that India has this rich and complex history.
And it's from this foundation that we will build our future. And that sense of historical consciousness
Yeah.
really fueled the nationalist movement.
Absolutely.
So we've got all these intellectual currents converging,
Right.
Western influence, indigenous rediscovery, this burgeoning sense of national identity.
It's like this perfect storm propelling India towards independence.
And in the midst of all of this,
Yeah.
the Indian National Congress emerges as this powerful force.
Led by a truly remarkable figure, Mahatma Gandhi.
Gandhi's leadership was a turning point.
Absolutely.
His approach, combining nonviolent resistance with this deep understanding of Indian society.
It really galvanized the masses.
But his path wasn't without obstacles.
No, not at all. And one event that really highlights his strategic brilliance is his rejection of the Cripps mission in 1942.
Right. The British were trying to secure India's support during World War II.
Yeah, by offering this kind of, you know, eventual self-governance.
But Gandhi saw right through it.
Yeah, he famously dismissed the offer as a post-dated check on a failing bank.
What a line. He knew that accepting anything less than complete independence would be a mistake.
It was a bold move.
Yeah.
And it really solidified the Congress's demand for full sovereignty.
Right. And paved the way for India's independence just a few years later.
Exactly.
It's incredible to see how these intellectual debates actually shaped political realities.
Absolutely.
But the road to independence wasn't easy, especially when it came to those rising communal tensions.
Right. It's a tragic irony that as Indians united against colonial rule,
yeah,
divisions within society actually deepened.
And these divisions weren't just because of British policies.
No, they had deep historical and social roots.
Right. Religion became this central marker of identity.
Yeah, and political mobilization increasingly occurred along religious lines.
You have groups like the Hindu Mahasabha, you know,
right,
championing Hindu interests.
Yeah.
And the Muslim League.
Yeah, advocating for a separate Muslim state.
And their demands are often framed in opposition to each other.
Exactly, which just further fueled those tensions.
It's almost like this tragic tug of war.
Yeah, pulling the fabric of society apart.
And the culmination of that, of course, is the devastating partition of 1947.
Yeah, a stark reminder of the human cost of division,
yeah,
and intolerance.
It's something we really need to understand and learn from.
Absolutely, so we can work towards a more inclusive future.
It's important to remember that these intellectual debates,
yeah,
weren't just about, you know, politics and independence.
No, they went much deeper than that.
They delved into social reform,
right,
cultural identity.
The very essence of what it meant to be Indian.
Yeah, in this rapidly changing world.
Exactly.
They're grappling with these huge questions.
Yeah.
About caste discrimination.
Right.
Women's rights.
Hmm.
The role of tradition in a modern society.
It's like they were trying to create a blueprint for a new India.
Yeah. Free from colonial rule.
And the shackles of the past.
And these debates weren't just limited to the elite.
No, they resonated at the grassroots level.
Yeah, we see reformers like Raja Ram Mohan Roy.
Yeah.
Challenging traditional practices, demanding change.
Mm-hmm. And in literature, figures like Premchand emerged,
writing
about ordinary Indians.
Yeah, shining a light on those social inequalities.
It was a period of incredible intellectual and creative energy.
That touched every aspect of Indian life.
And it fueled that long and arduous journey to independence.
So as we wrap up our deep dive,
yeah,
it strikes me how relevant these debates still are today.
Oh, absolutely. Issues of identity, secularism, social justice.
Yeah, they're still front and center.
It shows that the quest for a just and equitable society is an ongoing process.
It's a journey.
Yeah, a journey of continuous reflection and engagement.
So for you listening, what does all of this mean?
I think India's story is your story.
Hey.
It's a story woven with ideas, struggles, triumphs that search for meaning and identity.
Right.
And understanding the past helps us navigate the present.
Right. And hopefully shape a better future.
Exactly.
It's about recognizing the power of intellectual debate, critical thinking.
Yeah.
Engaging with different viewpoints.
That's so important.
So after this exploration,
yeah,
what stands out to you as the most significant impact of these debates on modern India?
Mm.
How do you think these historical events shaped the social, political, and cultural landscape of India today?
That's a really good question.
And think about that tension.
Yeah.
Between preserving tradition and embracing modernity.
Right.
Do you see echoes of that in contemporary India?
Those are some really great questions to consider.
As you continue to explore this pivotal era.
Absolutely.
Until next time, keep diving deep.